The mad Russian took his leave, then Cavaretta led the team. Ernie's baseball days were full of fun.
Let's all say one thing that I'm sure he would love to hear, and I want everyone to shout it at the top of their lungs. His favorite saying, let's play two. Ready? On a one, and a two, and a three. Let's play two! Thank you.
Doing some errands today, and I came home and I walked through the kitchen and into the family room, and my wife Brenda was standing there just sobbing. And I said, what's the matter? And she said, I've been listening to the coverage of the Ernie Banks funeral. It is so nice.
Come on, let's play too.
It was just so nice, she said. And I said, well, was there something specific that you were crying about? And she says, no, it's just so nice to hear this thing on the radio. Thank you to Dave Ennett and Andrea Darlis for doing the radio coverage of Ernie Banks' eulogy and funeral today. That was just really, really special, and he deserves all of the accolades that he got, and I'm glad that we were all able to hear that on the radio. Here on WGN. It's 112, and this is John Williams. We'll keep our eye on the weather for you this afternoon. Maybe, well, 6 to 10 inches, and the worst of it between 9 o'clock tonight and 9 o'clock tomorrow night. So stay tuned to WGN Radio. Incidentally, in just a couple of minutes, we'll talk to Daryl Butler, who is the Jackie Robinson West Little League coach. We talked to him many times. JRWLL is back in the news again. Before we get to that, though, I just wanted to sort of upsell a segment we're going to do in the second half hour, and that is when we talk to a professor at Northwestern University about Super Bowl advertising. I know everybody's doing that these days, and we'll tap some of his expertise for that, too. But I wanted to just preview for you one of the ads which will play on the Super Bowl. And this has been one of my favorite things to sometimes go back and just look at and listen to. It's 1994. It's the Today Show. Katie Couric and Brian Gumbel are sitting there. 1994 does not sound that long ago, does it? This is Katie Couric and Brian Gumbel discovering the World Wide Web.
Back now at 56 pass, I wasn't prepared to translate that.
That's
that
right.
Little mark with the A and then the ring around it?
At?
See, that's what I said. Katie said she thought it was about.
Yeah.
But I've never heard
or
it.
Around.
I've never heard it said. I'd only seen the mark. There it is. At amfeedback.com. I mean, what is internet
that,
anyway? What do you write to it like mail?
There's Allison. Can you explain what internet is?
So the commercial begins that way. Isn't that spectacular? That's 1994, and it's not like they're a couple of rubes, right? That's the Today Show figuring out that there is this thing with a little at, and it's called .com, Brian. But he didn't know. They were just then, as I recall, what they were telling their audience was, you can comment back to us, you know, at probably todayshow.com or something like that. But they didn't know what that meant. They didn't know even the vocabulary of their email address, and they were struggling with it. Well, now they've got Katie Couric and Brian Gumbel back in a new BMW electric car, and once again, they're mystified by the new technology. Probably not a bad ad, right? If you think, well, the World Wide Web kind of stood out, that took. Maybe this electric car from BMW will go too. It's really a neat ad, and we'll talk more about those in about 25 minutes. I think Daryl Butler is on the phone line. Kristen, I don't see my phone lines up in front of me, but if he is there, let's put him on. Hey, Daryl, are you there?
Daryl and I are texting right now, and he just said, give me a minute.
Daryl needs another minute?
He needs
another
minute.
Let's take a break, and then we'll come back to him. It's 1:15 on WGN. You know, the story you may have heard a little bit about is that Little League International officials are in Chicago today to meet with District 4 League presidents in the wake of the allegations that Jackie Robinson West Leader secretly expanded its league boundaries, overtaking sections of three sister leagues in a move to pick up all-star players that helped the team win the 2014 U.S. title. And, of course, they went all the way in the Little League World Series. They eventually lost the championship game. We talked to Daryl many times, and we all love that story, me a little too much, right? And when it broke that president or one of the executives of the Evergreen Park Little League was suspicious about how this one league in Chicago got all of these great players and mowed everybody down, he started to look into it. And he was seen as kind of a bad guy. Why can't we just enjoy this? And he said, well, why can't we just tell the truth about what happened? You know, we interviewed that guy too. And then that sort of went away. But now, lo and behold, the international officials are in Chicago today to talk to some of the local league presidents about what exactly went on here and did they break any rules? And for that matter, what are the consequences of it? And I was one of those people who said, well, you know, do we really have to look that hard at this? And my friend Matt Bubala, you may recognize that name, a longtime producer here and a little league dad whose son, in fact, was on a team that played against Jackie Robinson West. You know, Matt had a slightly different perspective. He was reasonable about it, but he was saying, well, honesty is honesty, fair is fair, and even if it's a little painful, maybe we shouldn't run from the truth of this story. So what is the truth? Okay, so we'll talk to the coach in a minute. John Williams on WGN. So have you called Kelly Cruises and Tours yet? Are you going to cruise with Brenda and me, or is it Brenda and I, to the Greek Isles this September? It's our eighth cruise with the gang at Kelly Cruises and Tours, and we sure hope you can travel along with us. We're going to sail on Regent Seven Seas Mariner for seven magical, all-inclusive days from Istanbul to Athens. It's a history-rich voyage that visits breathtaking ports of call, places like Rhodes. Does that ring a bell? Santorini, Ephesus, Mykonos. The first time they asked Brenda and I to go on this cruise, we said, sure, Greek Isles. I don't know exactly where those are, but how could you say no to that, right? Let's go to Greece, and let's go to Ephesus. And we did. And when we got there, I was amazed at how close we were to history, how able we were to come up to ancient marble columns and buildings and not just see them, but touch them and walk amongst them. When you go to Ephesus, you literally stroll up and down an ancient marble city. As Nancy said to us the last time she was on, you can actually step inside the grooves that were sort of worn into the marble streets from the carriages, I guess, that were, you know, being pushed or pulled by horses or whatever. But there you are, walking amongst the ruins of an ancient city. We had so many sort of stop and pause and think, wow, I'm really here moments when we were on this trip. And so after that, I just said, boy, if we can ever go back and do that tour again, I would do it. Well, here it is. So Ephesus and Rhodes and Santorini and Mykonos and more. And then you're spoiled by this friendly staff. Everybody has a balcony suite. It's just perfect on the Mariner. We enjoy cocktails. We dine together. We explore the sights with one another. And it's all inclusive. So once you get on that ship, whatever tension or troubles the world brings you, that big screw in your back just turns to the left. It feels so good to get on the ship. They hand you a glass of champagne. You go to your room. You look out your balcony. And then for 7 days, you're just cruising. We dine together, and it's all inclusive. You don't even tip at any point during the trip. The shore excursions are included. The trip has an unbelievable value. As a bonus, Kelly Cruises and Tours can arrange your round-trip airfare for this trip for free. Call 630-990-1111. Nancy said they actually brought some folks in today to grab your phone call right now. 630-990-1111. If you call now, they'll give you a $300 shipboard credit, too. So what's the number you can call right now? 630-990-1111, or write this down and surf it up, kellycruises.com. 127 on WGN.
When I wake up, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. And when I go out, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you.
My guess is people know this commercial already. What a great song, and it's the Budweiser ad where the Clydesdales save the little lost puppy from the wolves. And between the imagery, it's preposterous, right? And the music, it makes you want to run out and buy some beer, doesn't it? Tim Calkins joins us now. He's a professor of marketing at the Kellogg School at Northwestern. Hi, Tim. It's John Williams. How are you?
Terrific. Great to be here.
So let's just start with that ad, if you don't mind. That's my take on it. What do you think of that commercial?
Well, that ad is going to be very popular with people this year. You know, it's a classic Budweiser ad. You've got the Clydesdales. You've got the puppy. It warms the heart. That's going to be one that people are going to talk about and remember.
Yeah. Should we mind or notice or care that we've already seen the ads before the game? It used to be watch the commercials on the Super Bowl. That phenomenon's kind of gone away, hasn't it?
Well, it's very different this year because what's happening is everybody's releasing their ads ahead of time. They, you know, people used to not release anything. Then they started releasing occasional trailers, little snippets. This year, we're seeing a lot of the advertisers releasing them in advance. You know, they're doing it to get discussion and buzz and hype before the game. I don't think, though, that it's going to, you know, hurt the Super Bowl ads. You know, an ad like the Budweiser spot is so charming. People are going to be happy to see it a couple times, and I think it's still going to work pretty well.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, if you like a song, you like to hear it twice. I know people who've listened to podcasts twice. If it's a good commercial, why wouldn't you watch it more than once? Who cares that it's a spot? If it's 60 entertaining seconds, it's 60 entertaining seconds, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And what's amazing is people go on to YouTube and watch these ads again and again and again. So these advertisers are getting 30, 40, 50 million views on YouTube, which is sort of incredible that people go and deliberately set out to watch these ads again because they just find them so entertaining.
They post them on Facebook pages, for crying out loud. You know, the funny thing is, and I've just noticed this quite a bit this past week because I've been looking at a lot of ads online, which I don't normally do. But when you go to YouTube, not infrequently, there will be a commercial pre-roll before you see the commercial that you went to look at.
Which is sort of astonishing. And
yes,
which is now, yeah, the whole thing is really funny. This year we hit a new milestone because the Snickers people said, you know, if 2.5 million people go and post or tweet or talk about Snickers, then we will release our Super Bowl ad before the Super Bowl. So they're saying the big enticement, the big benefit here is they're going to show us the commercial before they would regularly show us the commercial. Which is,
I did see that ad, by the way. So I presume enough people have asked for it that they did release it early?
They have released it, so I think they did hit that. They must have hit the target because they did go ahead and release it. And, you know, that's the Brady Bunch spot. And but it's interesting that people so want to see these Super Bowl spots. That's why the Super Bowl is so unlike any other marketing event. You know, usually people work very hard to avoid seeing advertisements. On the Super Bowl, it's totally different.
Wanted to talk to you about a couple others in particular and about that way that's changed over the last couple of years. Stay right there. It's
Daddy.
Montage of scenes, kids old and young. Interacting with dads. Dads are playing with them and washing them and feeding them and comforting them. Of all things, it's a Dove commercial for the Super Bowl. Whatever happened to babes and beers? We're talking a little bit about the ad campaigns that are rolled out for the Super Bowl this year. This is John Williams, and Professor Tim Calkins is on a phone line. He's a professor of marketing over at the Kellogg School at Northwestern. Do you see any trends emerging, Tim? I mean, that's maybe a little different than maybe the classic Super Bowl ad. What's going on there?
Well, one of the things we're going to see this year is a lot of discussion, and this will be interesting to watch. There's going to be a lot of discussion this year about gender. So we're going to see at least three advertisers celebrate the wonderful qualities of men as fathers, as dads. So Dove's going to do it, and Toyota is going to go down that road. And at the same time, though, we're going to have the NFL running a spot about abuse and domestic abuse and about men as abusers and fathers as abusers, and that's a very different picture of men. And then we're going to have Procter & Gamble with the Always brand running a spot about women and girls. And what does it mean to, when you say run like a girl, why does that have associations? And so what's interesting on the Super Bowl this year, and very different, is we're going to get all these different perspectives on gender, which is really going to be something to watch. And it'll be interesting to see how all of that mixes together on the game.
That Procter & Gamble campaign has been a viral hit for a while. I suppose you've seen that, know a little bit about that campaign, but it's about empowering women, and it actually causes, I think, all of us to think a little bit. The way I recollect the ad is they'll ask maybe a woman who's 25 years old, show me what it means to run like a woman. And then they run silly, or they do something that feigns weakness. When they ask a little girl about that, when they ask a 9-year-old or a 5-year-old, show me how you swing a baseball bat or run, or show me how strong you are, those girls are, they haven't bought into whatever imagery we put in women's heads. Eventually, they do run strong. They do seem powerful. And it's kind of just something that makes you step back and say, what's going on here? I think it's a really interesting campaign.
Well, it's been very successful on YouTube. It's generated a lot of views, a lot of discussion. And now, in an interesting move, P&G is going to go put it on the Super Bowl. And it is one of those spots that really makes you think a little bit. And I think people will be doing that this year.
Saw an article in GQ this month. It's the special report inside Roger Goodell's season from hell. You know, it was just so complicated with Ray Rice and then the Adrian Peterson incident where he abused his word, I'll use, I don't think that's exactly what they called it, but disciplined too severely his son, all the way to the end of the season now and the whole controversy about the pounds per square inch in the footballs. If there was ever a guy who was probably anxious for this season to be over, it's Roger Goodell. And to your point about the campaign that the NFL is running now, where no means no, is that the essence of that?
Well, what they're going to run on the Super Bowl is actually this very chilling spot where a lady calls 911 and orders a pizza. And so the 911 operator then says, well, you know, you've called 911. She's like, yes, that's right. I'd like to order a pizza, half cheese, half pepperoni. And he's like, but this is 911. She's like, yes. And he's like, do you need help? And she's like, yes. And you can't talk to me. Is that right? And she's like, that's exactly right. How long do you think it'll take for that pizza? And it's this incredibly chilling, scary spot. And it's going to be, you know, really interesting to see how that goes over on the Super Bowl.
I'm sorry, what is the upshot there? That, in other words, that man is there in the room and so she can't dial 911?
Exactly right. So she's there. She's, you know, being abused, attacked by a loved one, and is the whole premise of this. And so she can't call for help. And the only way she can call for help is to call the 911 line.
Pretend to call pizza. Yeah.
And,
wow.
And the Super Bowl is such a upbeat, happy event that this kind of a message is going to stick out for sure on an otherwise pretty happy day. And it'll be really interesting to see how people react to that and how that goes over.
You know, do they care that at all the parties, you're right, I mean, the Super Bowl is always a unique environment. Do they care that that's going to kill the mood in the room? I guess that's what a good ad can do sometimes, right?
Well, I think a lot of people will, you know, I don't know, in second guess, but I think that the NFL's decision to run such a sort of scary ad, it really is sort of a scary spot, that was a big decision for the NFL, and I'm sure they've thought about it for a long time there. And it's something, I think, from an advertiser's perspective, you're like, wow, that's a very important, serious message. I just wouldn't want that ad to run right next to an ad for some goofy ad that's is going to be too much of a sharp contrast.
Indeed. My number is 312-981-7200. Steve's been holding for a while and wanted to make reference to that Snickers ad we were talking about. Hey, Steve, you're on the air. What can we do for you?
Well, hello. Welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
One other quick thing. We're going to miss number 14.
Yeah.
Great show. I'm very happy to hear you back. I had seen the Snickers ad. I seen a snippet of it this morning, and then my wife brought it up on YouTube on her phone, and I'm not going to do a spoiler alert, but the two actors in there are just absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
And I like them, and it's hilarious.
Yeah. Is the one actor, the second one who appears at the end of the ad, is he doing Cindy?
I'm not
or
sure.
Jan?
I don't have cable. I just have regular antenna TV, but He was in the Sopranos at one time. He's
been in a
few good movies.
It's a funny ad. And by the way, it's the same. It's neat because they took the vintage footage, the original episode from the Brady Bunch, but now they've inserted in real time some modern actors. And you know that notion that you're not yourself when you're hungry, and Snickers cures it. And so you go from being some monstrous person or thing to yourself. They inserted that into a Brady Bunch scene with some pretty funny actors, and it's a good ad, isn't it?
I enjoy it. I think that's going to be the best one. I've seen little snippets of other ads and everything with Pierce Brosnan in there. And
the Brosnan one's good.
Yeah, it's not what you expect, and that's the whole thing. And not the Bears are not in it, and of course, but we still enjoy watching the Super Bowl for the ads.
Yeah, well, that's I'm on page with you on that, Steve. Thanks for listening, and thanks for the call. We're talking a little bit about these ads with the professor of marketing over at Northwestern University. Do you think, Professor, that some of the ads are built and released with no intention of them ever making the airwaves because of either the controversy they'll create or whatever?
Well, there's no question that some companies create ads and then they count on those ads being rejected by the league and turned back. So people have done this over the years, and it's a way to get publicity. It's a way to get attention. You know, a couple of years ago, what was it, a company, I think it was a gay dating site called Man Crunch, produced a spot. And they're like, we want to run this Super Bowl ad, and unfortunately we can't do it. This year the big controversy has been about GoDaddy, of course, because they produced an ad that sort of poked fun at the classic puppy spot. And they released it earlier this week, but there was such an outcry that they've now said we're not going to run that spot. And they were forced to really backtrack and say we're not going to do it. Sort of an amazing story for GoDaddy.
It's a little bit like the Budweiser ad in that the puppy is in the back of a truck. The adorable little puppy falls off the back and then finally makes its way home through thick and thin and rain and the night and predators and everything. And the doggy finally gets home, and the nice 60-some-year-old woman, she's there, and she's kind of a farm setting. And she goes, oh, you made it home. And she picks up the dog. And then you realize she doesn't want the dog except to sell to somebody. And so then she says, ship him out. And off the dog goes to be sold to some puppy mill or market or somebody somewhere. And it's not a warm, fuzzy ad at all. It's jarringly mean at the end.
Yeah.
And I think their expectation must have been, right, Tim, that we would all laugh because we bought into that. But it's GoDaddy, and Danica Patrick drives away in a van. But I was so, offended's not the right word, but it might be. I was offended by that ad.
It's so, the people's reaction was so extreme. And there were so many people that were mad at that ad. So dog breeders were mad at the ad, and animal rights people were mad. And that, you know, you shouldn't have dogs running around in the back of a pickup truck anyway. And people said, you're abusing these animals.
Right.
And it was absolutely astonishing. People like on the Super Bowl, I think, they like the warm emotion. They love the upbeat humor. When somebody shows up with a bit of a snarky ad, people really get mad at it because, you know, we love all the emotion and we love the classic stuff and we want to protect that.
Here's my theory on that. GoDaddy is a website where you go to register addresses and domain names. That's all. It's an appliance. It's a tool. You don't have to like it. It's not a flavor. It's just a thing you go to get something done. So in a way, they don't really have to care if you like them. They just need to know that you know them. And so if the message is a little offensive or off-putting, I mean, half the population might have been offended by their, say, two sexy ads in the past, but what did they care, right? And maybe more men tend to use the internet or register domain names than women, so they didn't care. And I think the notion that they care is a ruse anyway. They never intended to run the ad. They knew it would blow up virally, and they'd get all of that mileage without having spent a dime. I gave that theory to an ad man who happens to know the people that put the spot together. And he said, you know, I don't think that's right. In fact, they are recrafting a spot. They will fill that slot. They're rebuilding an ad that will replace it. My idea is to take that 60-second spot, at least that's the one I saw online, maybe it'll be a 30-second version on TV, but take the same spot, and at the end when the puppy comes home, have the lady embrace it and wash it up and put it to bed at night. You know, I mean, just take the same spot, but say, okay, we heard you, and then do something nice to the dog instead of ship it off to the puppy mill.
Right. Well, they certainly can, they are going to recraft it, and they could certainly come up with a happier ending. I don't think, a lot of people wonder if that was all a setup, because they did get a heck of a lot of publicity for it. I don't think it was at all a setup. Because, and the reason I think that is because there were just a series of mistakes in that ad. And I think it was just an ad that wasn't created particularly well.
What do you mean by that?
Well, so for example, if you were really doing the setup, the way you would have done it, it would have been this ad, but you would have run the ad, and at the end, you know, they ship them out, but then they would have revised it to have a nice warm ending at the end, and that would have been the way to generate publicity, but then turn it into a positive. But the issue, like the dog in the back of the pickup truck got a lot of people mad, and the dog getting thrown out of the pickup truck got a lot of people mad. And you wouldn't have done things like that if it was all just a setup. In the end, it might work out okay for GoDaddy. You know, if they run a really sweet ad now, people might say, wow, okay, they're not such a bad company after all. Oh, it was really interesting that a lot of their competitors jumped right on it. And a lot of their competitors started sending out emails to people saying, if you feel a certain need to transfer your domain name, well, we're going to give you a special deal, and you can use coupon code PUPPYLOVE.
Well, that sort of deflates my theory then, doesn't it? Because that sounds like they made themselves vulnerable with the ad instead of, ever more profitable. It's 1:50. Tim, just give me one more minute of your time. Tim Calkins is on the line. He's a professor of marketing at the Kellogg School at Northwestern. I just wanted to get your reaction to the T-Mobile ad that's going to run in the BMW spot. And we'll get to all of that next on WGN.
Hi, I'm Kim. Each month, millions of gigs of unused data are taken back by wireless companies. Tragic. Data you paid for that could be used to see my makeup.
1:54 on WGN. John Williams here. That's Kim Kardashian. It's a spot for T-Mobile that'll run in the Super Bowl, and in it you see her in various poses. It's actually, I think, a pretty good ad. It's not all that sexist or racy, and it's certainly trading on the Kardashian name, but I thought in a surprisingly clever way. I don't know what your take on that is, Tim Calkins, professor over at Northwestern, but I thought I would have expected worse from a Kardashian spot. Let me just say that.
Well, exactly right. That's an effective piece of advertising. So at Kellogg, we study all of these ads, and we'll actually review all of these ads during the game. And we have a panel of students that will critique them. And what we're looking at, though, is we're trying to think about, will this build the business and will it build the brand? What the T-Mobile spot does, which is really good, is it tells you it gives you a specific reason why you should go with T-Mobile.
And
one of the things these ads have to do is deliver a benefit, and it does that.
Well, that's it. Not only do you get the whole time you're kind of transfixed because it's Kim Kardashian. Okay, what's going to happen next, right? But I never thought about that. When you have unused minutes that you pay for with your plan, what happens to those? They keep the money. With this T-Mobile plan, either you get rebated or you transfer them to another month, whatever. But I've seen this ad, and I thought, Kim Kardashian notwithstanding, I didn't know that. This is valuable information for me. So who knew?
That's exactly right. Now they're telling us some reason to go do that. It's one of the challenges with Super Bowl ads. A lot of the ads you'll see will be very entertaining, very funny, very emotional. The question is, does it connect back to the brand? So is there linkage? And does it give you a benefit? So is there the positioning? Does that come through? Ultimately, this all has to turn into sales. Otherwise, it's not going to work very well for the companies.
Tim, I appreciate you coming in this afternoon. Is there a place or way that we can watch your students do their thing, or what can we do for you along those lines?
Well, after the game, we'll post all of our results and our perspective on the different ads, which one's worked, which one's different. which ones didn't work. You can see them all. Probably the easiest place is just at my website, timcawkins.com. But also you can Google the Kellogg Super Bowl advertising review, and that will get you there as well.
Thanks for coming in. Let's visit again, Tim.
Thank you.
It's 1:56 on WGM. Jeff Knurek is on a phone line. Jeff and I have talked before. I hope you've heard some of our conversations. He's the famous Jumble illustrator. Hey, Jeff, it's John Williams. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, John?
I'm doing real well. You and I have an event at the Tribune Tower coming up Saturday, March 7th, right?
That's right. Can't wait.
I just wanted to make sure you and I talked about this during my weekday show. We haven't talked about it on Saturdays, of course, so perhaps some people are hearing this for the first time. Dave Hoyt and you, the sort of author and also the illustrator of those famous Jumble games that you play in the Tribune, you guys are, along with me, going to do a special event at the Tribune where you actually create Jumbles for fans of Jumble. It's a chance to meet you guys, also to solve some Jumble puzzles and just immerse yourself in Jumblebilia. How's that sound?
That's great. Yeah, we're going to go over, and anybody who's really our true fans will love this, because we're going to, first of all, give you a history of the Jumble. We're going on our 61st year right now in 2015, and we'll go and we'll show you some of the original Jumbles, which, the Jumble was actually originally called Scramble, and it eventually changed into the Jumble, but we're going to show you some of the original artwork and puzzles, and we're going to go through the decades, leading all the way up to our present incarnation with Dave Hoyt and myself. And not only will we do that, we'll show you and we'll create a Jumble live in front of people. And that's going to be a special event, because we're going to have the audience help us create that Jumble by giving us the pun to work with. And we're going to have live competitions and games, and we'll have books for sale. And we have a brand new Jumble game that everybody who's there is going to help us try for the first time live, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I think it will be. It's going to be Saturday, March 7th, a couple of hours. The event's actually in the Tribune Tower in a conference room-sized space, so pretty intimate, but enough room for a good group, and I've never done anything like this. Actually, I have done something marginally like this. I one time emceed a Sudoku off, so we crowned the Sudoku champion of Chicago. And I know that the enthusiasts of games are really enthusiastic. So for those of you that are that, or maybe just moderately interested but want to do something creative and different, Saturday, March 7th, where do we go to sign up? How do I do this, Jeff?
If you go to jumble.com, which is our main page, right on the very front page, you'll see a picture of all three of us up there, and there'll be a button that says click for ticks. And that'll take you to the ticket spot, and you'll get that information that you just gave, first time and where it's at, and that'll allow people to buy the tickets. I think we're $20. We're going to keep we're keeping the audience to a minimal number, because we really want everybody to have a very intimate experience. And get to play and have us and participate. You know, when you get into too large, I think right now, until we get this down, we'd rather keep it so everybody has a good time. We can, see and interact with everybody there.
Jumble.com, then click for ticks. We'll see you on March 7th. Okay, Jeff, I'll let you run, but good luck, and we'll see you soon.
All right.
The mad Russian took his leave, then Cavaretta led the team. Ernie's baseball days were full of fun.
Let's all say one thing that I'm sure he would love to hear, and I want everyone to shout it at the top of their lungs, his favorite saying, let's play two. Ready? On a one, and a two, and a three. Let's play two! Thank you.
Talking baseball and the Cubs.
Earlier today, you heard that and more. Here on WGN Radio, the funeral services for Ernie Banks, and it was touching. It was well done. The music and the readings and the funny stories and the sad stories, it all sounded right to us, I'll tell you that. It's 2:11 on WGN. This is John Williams. You haven't heard me on Saturday afternoons before. You do today, and you will next Saturday, I hope, and Saturdays thereafter. This is my new slot, no longer weekdays, but on Saturday afternoons from 1 to 3, and you can sure follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/KingJohn. In fact, there today I posted a picture of the Charlie Hebdo that you've heard a lot about. I mean, the one that has the green cover and Je suis Charlie on the front, tout est pardonné. And I've been kind of hot to get my hands on one of these things for the longest time just to sort of see what that was all about. It turns out they're actually having a conference free and open to the public at UIC about this, and I'll give you the details on that in just a minute. Jennifer Solheim is one of the people that will be presenting there. She's from the University of Illinois at Chicago. She's a specialist in North African and Middle Eastern culture in France, and she'll be one of the people that's presenting there. Jennifer, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
So you speak French, and are you a professor of French studies, too? I mean, exactly what is your discipline?
Right. So I'm in the Department of French and Francophone Studies, and this could be disputed, but I would say that there's a lot of crossover between the two. So although I mostly work on North Africa and the Middle East, that carries over to France as well. So,
why is there a crossover now? Why is that in dispute?
Well, I don't know that it's in dispute, but part of it is there is France, the country, and then there's the French-speaking world, which is often referred to as Francophone. So some people would say those two things are distinct. I would argue that they're, in terms of culture and literature, that's a blurry line.
Earlier this month, a few people burst into Charlie Hebdo, killed 12, injured others, and so a lot of us just then for the first time were discovering this. Do you call it a newspaper or magazine?
The staff of Charlie Hebdo would refer to it as a fanzine, using the American term. It's kind of a weekly. Hebdo means weekly. So a sort of weekly magazine or newspaper.
And what's its niche? I mean, what kind of a newspaper is it?
Right. So it's, those familiar with The Onion in the United States, it's akin to that, except it's much more puerile. It's much more vulgar. The type of humor in Charlie Hebdo is actually called bête et méchant, which means basically stupid and vile, stupid and mean.
Genre.
So, you get a sense from that.
And do we have an equivalent to that? I mean, I know a lot of us think of The Onion or Mad Magazine, but do we really have this kind of a voice in popular printed American culture?
We really don't. And part of it is that this is a tradition in France that goes back to the early 19th century with caricature. There was, a drawing, a caricature of the king, Louis-Philippe, drawn to make his head look like a pear. The artist and the editor were put on trial for this, and the editor basically said, look, all we did was the guy has a pear-shaped head. What's the problem with us just drawing the outline of it and calling it a pear, right? From our perspective, it looks very cute. At the time, it was pretty incendiary.
Fast forward now to Islamic extremists who think that any depiction of Muhammad is grounds for terrorist retaliation. What do you make of sort of egging that population on?
I don't know that you can say specifically Charlie Hebdo was targeting Islam in any way, right? One of the major points of Charlie Hebdo is, as is the case throughout France, there's a real duty to question the role of religion and religious institutions, right? So when I think about Charlie Hebdo before all of this happened, when I think about being in Paris and seeing people reading it on the train or whatever, I would actually think of the Pope. That would be the first thing I would think of.
What do you mean?
Well, there would be imagery of the Pope in a similar way to what's been passed around about Muhammad. Just highly satirical, highly critical, very harsh, and often very infantile.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it's not like they just picked on Muslims. They picked on Catholics. They pick on everybody, right?
Catholics, Jews, Christians, feminists. You name it, it's a target. And that's part of the point. That's part of the idea behind this satire, is that nothing is sacred.
This cover that I just described, give us some context to that. Tout est pardonné, all is forgiven. Who is forgiving whom in the cover of that first issue after the shooting?
Well, I think that's actually part of the play here, is who is forgiving and who is being forgiven, right? So here we have another depiction of Muhammad, right, which is ostensibly the reason why the staff at Charlie Hebdo were targeted and attacked
and
killed.
And he has a tear coming out of his eye.
Right. And he's holding the now famous phrase, you know, a sign with the now famous phrase, Je suis Charlie. So it's really, I mean, a lot of lines are blurred here, which is often the case with Charlie Hebdo cartoons, is that they draw from a whole bunch of disparate sources, right, and sort of put them together. And it's up to the reader to interpret that and to find it funny or not. Right.
But if nothing else, it would appear as though at least even Muhammad is saying, I'm sorry, you know, in my name, these fools did this. Right.
Right. Certainly that's one of the overt messages here.
When we open it up, then, I don't speak French or not well enough to appreciate what's happening here, but you and I each have a copy, and I'll just describe a little of it, and while our listeners won't be able to see it, they'll be able to perhaps understand. When you open it up, it opens up into, if you will, one big full page, an article in the middle,
right,
which is split by the seam in the middle, and then cartoons all the way around, in black and white, a couple of them in color. What are we seeing here?
This is a pretty typical sort of Charlie Hebdo spread. Again, everything is being mocked here, more or less. We have Sister Emmanuel, who's talking about masturbation and oral sex.
Really? It's just a picture. That's the one in the upper left-hand corner.
That's the one in the upper left-hand corner.
It's just a line drawing of a wrinkled old lady. She's got a matronly look on her face, glasses, and there's something here that is some off-color joke about oral sex.
Right.
That's it? And then that's it? That's just ha-ha-ha funny?
What's More the thing, or less,
What's
yeah.
the thing below it? Enfant la iPhone 5. And then it says blaspheme, sacrilege, something else. What's going on there?
So, iPhone 5, not the newest iPhone, but one of the new. These cartoons, I should mention, are reprints from older issues, right?
Got it.
So these are the artists who were killed a few weeks ago.
Oh, I see.
Right. So Cabu is one of this one that we're looking at now is Cabu. So the idea here was the iPhone 5 was new at the time, and that you would have these different, and this is supposed to be an Islamic extremist here, you can tell by the beard, basically. So blasphemy, sacrilege, and then I'm not sure what apost, that's a different, probably relating to, taking Islam, insulting Islam, something like that. And essentially, it's almost like a bomb going off, right? They would use the iPhone 5 to set off a bomb.
Oh, I see. It's a new feature on the iPhone.
Right,
and
he can watch it.
This is how the
Islamic
extremists would be using it.
Yeah.
What is the article in the middle about?
So the article in the middle, the apéro, this is the usual introduction. That's what it's called, which essentially means a before-dinner cocktail. That's what the opening piece is usually called in Charlie Hebdo. The title of it, the headline is, Will There Still Be Yes, But? And what's going on here is it's a piece basically that's talking about the question of laïcité in France, which is the rough translation of that word is secularism. Where we would think of that differently in the United States is where we think about separation of church and state as protecting religious beliefs, religious institutions, freedom of religion.
Mm-hmm.
In France, it's more so freedom from religion for the state. And this actually goes back to the revolution, which was, fighting against an aristocracy that believed they had the divine right to rule over the people, right? So that's been a huge issue in France ever since. It was actually codified into law in 1905, the idea of we cannot have religion be a part of the state in any way. And so that's what this piece is about. It's talking about the question of what are the limits of laïcité and freedom of expression in France.
Well, that's timely in this case.
Right.
The whole world has sort of taken Charlie Hebdo as a sort of, the flag for freedom of the press, the flag for freedom of expression, the flag for my right to insult you, even if I find it insulting because you can't shut my words and thoughts down.
Right.
Tell me what else. I'll pause here. Come back and just give me some of the highlights and some of the lowlights, if you will. of this famous edition. Six. What did you happen to see what the number is of issues of this sold? I know it went to 6 million, but I don't know if they had additional reprinted as well.
You know, I'm actually not sure about that. I'm not sure if they reprinted. But, yeah, I mean, it was a blockbuster for Charlie Hebdo. They usually have a fairly, you know, pretty modest circulation.
Well, the numbers were 60,000 and, in this case, 6 million minimum.
Right.
It's 221. All right, we'll pick it up here in a minute. This is WGN. So there goes the sun. The clouds are here, and so, too, will the snow be. We haven't backed off that forecast yet. The overall snow accumulation, 6 to 10 inches starting tonight. Less today than tomorrow, a little more tomorrow. When it's all said and done, you might have more than 10 inches, depending on where you're living and listening. Tonight's snow and the temperatures are moderate for the weekend, really. I mean, 28 tonight and tomorrow, 28 degrees. It starts to get cold Sunday night, and Monday will be windy and cold and snow-packed. More about that in just a few minutes. It's 2:24. In the next half hour, Matt Rausch, as he has so many times on Saturday afternoons on WGN, visits with us again from TV Guide magazine to talk about some of the trends in TV and what we're looking forward to this spring, including what NBC is going to be doing with Thursday nights. Right now, though, we're talking a little bit about that Charlie Hebdo magazine, which came to Chicago this past week. In fact, at UIC, they're having a conference, a roundtable on Charlie Hebdo. Details on that in just a minute. Jennifer Solheim is one of the presenters there and professors over at UIC. So she and I each have a copy of this. Where did you get yours, by the way, Jennifer? How did you get your hands on one of these things?
I got it from Kristen.
So. Marv, my producer, as did I. I mean, literally, we were talking to people in France saying, can you get one on a plane and send it here? And Chicago's not Timbuktu. It was hard to get a copy here. People in Paris were having trouble.
And I have to thank our loyal listener, Skip, who was in Paris and who got us both the magazine.
Oh,
so,
that's right. Oh, this is
you.
From Skip.
This it is from Skip, yep.
Directly, and it came directly to my house. He bared the expense. It's in mint condition, not so much as a note that I could even mention his name on the radio. So, Skip, thank you. We appreciate that. And now let's just wrap it up by telling us a little bit more about what stands out in this issue to you, Jennifer. What's noteworthy, good or bad?
I think, you know, from the cover to some of the commentary, it's much more gentle. It's clearly there's a sense of we're going to keep doing this. We're going to continue. There's a lot of, I mean, let's see if there's a pagination. Yeah, page 8. The center spread. Yeah. Over on the left-hand side, Luz, who's one of the remaining surviving stockholders, he wasn't there on the 7th, so he wasn't killed. Yeah. But he's been one of the very public faces of mourning of the Charlie Hebdo team. He has a cartoon that's the negatives and the positives in the days after the shooting.
Lay plus and lay minus.
Here. Yeah, exactly. So, for instance, I mean, in my mind, it's a little more measured and a little more, I mean, it actually made me laugh out loud at moments. You know, the flag at half mast, my libido's at half mast, and it's a picture of him in bed with his wife, and she's saying, "It'll come back, my love." You know, just the fact that this really is obviously a very traumatic event, not just for the cartoonists. But for
you get the sense, yeah. But
for you know, the French public, most of these cartoonists, they didn't just do Charlie Hebdo. They were also very well known, awarded, beloved cartoonists who worked across several genres.
You get the sense maybe this issue was, they knew this was for a larger audience. This was for more
yes.
than just its aficionados. A friend of mine, though, is a French teacher, and he said, you know, I'm offended by, I'm not a fan of this. I mean, everything that it represents, absolutely. But this kind of commentary and cartoon wasn't his cup of tea. You probably hear that a lot. What's your sense of it?
Personally, it's been really interesting over the last few weeks to be defending so vigilantly something that I don't particularly find funny and I often find offensive.
Right.
Right. Nonetheless, I mean, it comes out of not only old French tradition, but it comes out of punk culture. It, you know, this is part of satire is, you know, raw brutish commentary, right, that's both visual and in language.
And the commentary that's in here in the cartoons are about religion, politicians, issues. I mean, it's not a sports magazine. It's not a political magazine per se, right? Is it just kind of a mishmash?
I would say there is a definite, more than an undercurrent of political engagement in Charlie Hebdo. It definitely takes, its two main targets are religion and capitalism.
Really? They don't like capitalism?
Well, and that's another kind of duty in French to question the value of capitalism. So, yeah.
They had a tragedy that has turned into, kind of like that last column said, maybe something positive, and that we discovered it and it made us appreciate a little more freedom of expression, freedom of the press, freedom of caricature. Although, you know, just one last note from you, Jennifer. I understand that some newspapers, major newspapers, the New York Times among them across this country, didn't run this cover of this issue on theirs because they didn't want to be the object, as was Charlie Hebdo. In fact, when I posted it on Facebook, somebody said to me, shouldn't you digitize the cover as have others? I wonder what you think of all of that.
I think this is part of liberty of expression, right? Charlie Hebdo first became a target of Islamic extremists after the assassinations in, why am I blanking right now, Denmark in 2006?
Yeah, well, it was the Danish paper.
Danish paper, yeah. So they reprinted some of those cartoons, and that was when they first kind of landed on the in the crosshairs of Islamic extremists. I think it's up to the magazine, the newspaper, the website, whether or not they're going to reprint these or, you know, post photos of it. I just posted a photo on Facebook and on Twitter of me sitting here getting ready with the cover. Yeah. And I did that pretty intentionally because I know that in most strains of Islam, this is not an issue.
Right, right.
So,
well, I'm glad you said that. I think that's fair, and I'm glad that you mentioned that as well. So this conference, this roundtable that you all are having,
right,
is going to be, what's the date on that again?
It's February 18th, 2:30 p.m. On the UIC campus at the Institute for the Humanities.
That's going to be a Wednesday. It's 2 hours, 2:30 to 4:30 on 2/18. And is there a website I can go to find out more or sign up? Do you just walk in?
You can just walk in. It's open to the public. Some of the guests include Jane Weston Vauclair, who actually has done quite a bit of research and spent a lot of time with the staff of Charlie Hebdo. So it's going to be a great discussion. We also have someone who's talking about the history of caricature in France, talking about the role of Voltaire in the aftermath, and also about the irony of Charlie Hebdo being targeted, since the magazine actually, part of their satire in the 70s and the 60s had to do with Algerians being tortured by the French government. So it should be a great conversation.
I do appreciate you coming by, and that'll be Wednesday, February 18th, over at UIC. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
David, now you know why I moved to Minneapolis. I couldn't stand the winters.
Right. Uh-huh.
6 to 10 inches total, then it gets windy, and then it gets so cold it's not going to melt away anytime soon.
Right. Like Minnesota is somehow much better than this?
It's a lot warmer. It's a lot less snowy.
Okay. I believe you.
Well, at least this weekend it will be. Let me say that.
Okay.
I get bragging rights this time. You will probably. Maybe I haven't had the last laugh at your expense here. But those are tough numbers, man, from 9 tonight to 9 tomorrow night, up to 10 inches of snow, then windy, and then really cold. So winter finally arrives in Chicago. It's 2:41. Matt Rausch from TV Guide magazine joins us, as he has many times on WGN Radio. Matt, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great. Also very chilly here in New York City, so I don't know who's got the bragging rights this weekend.
You had that big storm that sort of fizzled out in New York City, but I understand you have another wave coming your way, right?
So I hear. It'll be a perfect night to stay in for the Super Bowl, I guess. That's the good news.
114 million people watched it last year, which is really spectacular. A third, better than a third of America doesn't do anything, but we do watch the game.
We do that, and even then, the network that runs it says we're underestimating the numbers because of the people who watch it at parties and watch it in bars and the stuff that isn't being counted by those who measure viewership. So we just know that, you know, it is one of those things. And football in general defies the trends in television where the numbers just keep steady and keep going up every year, and it's the one thing that people actually watch live as opposed to the time shifting we do with everything else on TV. And as ratings go down for everything, including once powerful brands like American Idol, and, you know, NBC comedy used to have, you know, however many people used to watch Seinfeld and all that. Now, come next week, there's no comedies at all on NBC on Thursday night. Just how times have changed. But the one thing that doesn't change is we do watch football and we gather for the Super Bowl. The numbers are going to be enormous. The advertising rates are insane, 4.5 million for 30 seconds, and half those ads have already been leaked out. So it's just, you know, it is one of those things that is a true phenomenon.
Nothing wrong about that. You know, I
know
it is what it is.
Anything that makes TV look really super powerful is okay in my book.
Well, I understand that. And I was actually thinking about that because I think the Super Bowl as an advertising vehicle is not so important anymore, in that 114 million of us and $4.5 million per 30 notwithstanding. The point is, if you just launch a commercial virally and say this is our Super Bowl ad, you almost get as much traction out of it on the internet as you do TV. Do you agree with that?
Well, I do. Yeah, exactly. And even something like what happened with the GoDaddy ad earlier this week, where they had to pull it because animal rights activists got upset at the joke about selling pets via the internet, even that became such a huge story that GoDaddy got its money's worth even without having to hear the ad on Super Bowl. I think they're going to put another thing in the slot they had scheduled for that particular ad. But I mean, the idea here is that you can make so much noise just by being part of this environment. That yes, that's why these companies and as I've been reading, quite a few new companies, as often happens, will be advertising for the first time this year in the Super Bowl. And even if they never do it again, it helps put them on the map just because they were part of this whole, you know, thing. It's just so big.
15 first-time companies. So then after the Super Bowl, Blacklist moves to Thursday night, right?
That is a big deal. That is one of the other big things about any network that has the Super Bowl. They get to leverage this show to do something else. And for this case, the fact that the Blacklist is coming on after the game, if you are awake still or not too groggy to enjoy it. But the idea here is they're positioning it for a move to Thursday. So next week, the Blacklist will be the centerpiece show on a new all-drama NBC Thursday, and the Blacklist being a rare breakout hit for NBC in particular, but TV in general, that, again, trying to position it to see whether it can really hold its own. One of the things that helped make the Blacklist break out and be so popular was it airing on Mondays following usually episodes of The Voice, which is the predominant singing competition of the moment right now, feeding them a big audience. So the real question mark is whether the Blacklist can stand on its own on Thursdays, but getting this huge boost on Super Bowl Sunday will help. They're also doing a very smart thing that they're repeating Sunday's episode on Thursday in front of the new episode. It's part of a two-parter, a big explosive episode that's going to have a huge cliffhanger driving people to Thursday night. But it goes head-to-head with Scandal, which is, again, one of those truly viral water cooler shows. Shonda Rhimes owns Thursday night right now with her crazy melodramas on that night, Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder, the venerable Grey's Anatomy. So NBC has its work cut out for it. But again, if any show's going to do it, maybe it's going to be Blacklist and getting that huge boost at the Super Bowl. That's what really one part of this whole getting the game is all about, is to boost your primetime schedule.
312-981-7200. You've got a question about a show, you've got one that you're missing or wondering some detail about, 312-981-7200 is the number. By the way, my wife and I have been going through a binge watch just to get ready for House of Cards. What has your take been on the two seasons of that show?
Well, you know, I loved the original British series all those years ago. I've been doing this so long, so I can remember how much I loved that when it aired on Masterpiece Theater, when it was done British ways. So I think it's a brilliant franchise, and it is a perfect show for the binge watching, because one hour just completely compels you into the next. It's very addictive. It's you know, it's a dark little show, and perfect in like a 13-hour binge. I mean, you know, even I can't sit and watch something 13 hours straight hardly. But over a little period of time,
yeah.
That's a perfect kind of a show for that. I almost prefer when these binges. They have a show right now called The Fall in its second season, a British import starring Gillian Anderson, really terrific crime drama in like 6-hour chapters. That's like a perfect binge time. 13 is quite a bit to chew off, but nonetheless, it helped put Netflix on the map and all this streaming phenomenon. Again, TV is now everything. There's so much more TV. It's almost like I keep thinking, who isn't making TV nowadays? Amazon is making TV, and Amazon's yeah. making really good TV. If you haven't seen Transparent and seen Jeffrey Tambor's performance in Transparent, you're missing one of the best things that happened in TV that really isn't TV, but it really is truly TV, and it won a Golden Globe.
I think the second season is not nearly as good as the first, and yet we do have that phenomenon that probably a lot of people can relate to. When a series is, or when an episode is over of one of these shows that you're plowing through,
yeah.
you turn to the person you're watching with and say, do you want to do another? And you go, no, we can't. It's 2 a.m. We got to go to work tomorrow, whatever. You go, yes, we're going to watch another one. Yay. And you don't have to wait next week. You wait 9 seconds, and then the thing loads, and you're off and running again, you know?
And it's really spoiling people, because this idea of, you know, watching episodic TV on a weekly basis and having to wait another week for a show, like, say, when 24 was on, the first time I ever became aware of this was hearing that people would not watch 24 during the regular season. They'd wait for the DVD to come out so they could watch it all in one fell swoop, because it was just too excruciating to wait an entire week between episodes. And of course, nowadays, you know, it's going to be streamable. It's going to be on demand. You can let the episodes build up. There's so many different ways to watch TV now. The metrics of what is a successful TV show are, you know, who knows what. And of course, Netflix doesn't give viewer information, you know, ratings type information. We don't know how many people are actually watching them. Mm-hmm. We just know their subscriber numbers are really strong. And having original programming like this and Orange is the New Black, and for Amazon to have something like Transparent getting such great raves, and they have a show coming up in a couple of weeks in February, a series version of the Harry Bosch detective novels from Michael Connelly, and I'm thinking, how did nobody make that a series before? And, you know, Amazon got it. When you keep thinking, you know, this is the kind of show that CBS could have gone to town with. But as it turns out, it's a pretty solid show. Titus Welliver, great character actor playing Harry Bosch.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's going to be a big demand for that. So, again, these shows are shots across the bow and getting you addicted to TV in a whole new way. And much like with Netflix, Amazon will put, like, all 10 or however many hours of Bosch out all at once. So once you get into the story, you can just watch it to your heart's content and don't have to wait weeks between episodes.
Kevin Spacey is so good, of course, but Robin Wright is just amazing in that.
I think
too.
She owned the second season of the House of Cards.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. All right, it's 2:49. The number is 312-981-7200. A phone line is open. Lots of calls for Matt Roush from TV Guide Magazine. You want to get one of your questions answered? This guy can answer them next on WGN. 2:54. Got just a couple of minutes with Matt Roush from TV Guide Magazine. By the way, Matt, as we pick up a couple of phone lines, anything particularly on the television horizon that's of interest to you that we should know about?
Oh, I think that people are really going to be interested in this Better Call Saul series that's coming up next weekend on AMC, going to launch alongside a new the back half of the season of The Walking Dead on AMC. This is the spinoff prequel to Breaking Bad, built around the character, the sleazy lawyer, Saul Goodman. But the fact is that he isn't that character when this thing begins. And much like you watched Walter White evolve into Heisenberg, this is going to be how this hard luck lawyer named Jimmy McGill becomes Saul Goodman. Odenkirk is good. It's that same mix of humor and violence, and you never really know what's going to happen next. It's a really interesting idea. I've never seen a spinoff quite like it, so we'll see how that goes. But boy, no one saw Breaking Bad becoming the phenomenon it became, so I have a feeling that people want to watch and or possibly binge someday Better Call Saul.
Have they screened episodes for you? Have you watched?
I've seen 3 so far, and I'm really impressed so far. Yeah.
Huh. Let's pick up a couple of phone lines, then we'll go to Cassie on line 1. You're on WGN. Thanks for holding, Cassie. What's your question?
Thank you for taking my call, John. I have 2 brief questions. First of all, what time is The Blacklist going to be on Thursday nights? And secondly, why is NBC putting The Blacklist or a subsequent show up against Elementary, which to me is must-see TV?
Well, the good news, you won't have to pick between the two of them if you're watching like in real time, because Blacklist will be airing it. I'm using Central Time here. It'll be 8 o'clock Central if Elementary is on at 9 o'clock Central. So they will not be going head-to-head. Blacklist will be on in the middle hour. It's going to be like the centerpiece show, and so that's when it's going to be airing on Thursday.
Real good. Good luck, and thanks for calling, Cassie. Let's go to Tim. You're on the air. Hi, Tim.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your thought?
I had a question about if a show was going to come back on. I believe it was on Fox with Christopher Maloney. It was Surviving Jack.
Oh, yeah. No, that only made it the one season, so it won't be back. Fox has been struggling with their comedy brand, and that one, I thought that was a pretty interesting idea for a show. I love Christopher Maloney, but it won't be back. So they're trying some other new things this season.
Sorry about that, Tim. Don't you hate to be the bearer of those tidings? People always call in on a segment
and
like
TV,
this.
Especially network TV. It seems like you're always given that tidings, which is why having a hit like Empire come on Fox the way that it has the last couple of weeks, it's kind of good news. So it's always nice to see a new hit come along, but they can sometimes be far and few between.
Give me one last short answer to one last question.
Sure.
What's a show I'm probably not watching that I should be?
Well, that is a good question. I don't know why.
You don't know what I'm watching,
oh,
right?
Here we go. Tough, how about like Jane the Virgin on the CW? Jane the Virgin, a real breakthrough show for the CW. Adorable show. It's kind of like the new Ugly Betty. I love the tone of it and just the whole feel. It's wonderful, and the CW has actually won some awards out of it now, and it's a show. And the CW itself right now with shows like The Flash and Arrow and Jane the Virgin, it's in a bit of a upswing, and they've got a show called The 100, which is almost like a Hunger Games on television. They're actually doing some pretty good work on the CW right now.
That's interesting to know. Matt Rausch from TV Guide magazine. Click there. You'll also be able to see a gallery of some amazing photos from Game of Thrones. And a lot of us are really anxious for that to come back, too. Matt, let's visit again soon. I always appreciate talking to you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Matt Rausch from TV Guide. 257, sports right around the corner. It's The Beat with the Jasons. That's coming up on WGN.
Next stop on the WGN Radio Home.